All right. So today we wish to talk about a topic, a function of who you are, that for most people on a spiritual journey can be the sticky wicket, quote-unquote, as they call it, can be the snag, can be the rug pulling out under your feet, energy in your path. It can be something that can seem to endlessly sabotage you, hold you back, and also, on the positive end, can give you sterling, delightful, glorious successes. Manifesting realities on the physical plane is something you came to do. You came here to experience physical plane reality. You came to learn how to create reality. You came how to learn how to manifest in the physical plane, which is actually the lowest vibration of the physical universe. It's the most dense. It's the most concentrated of the, or the, not concentrated, but the most, perhaps the darkest area on the whole physical universe. Physical universe including physical plane, astral, causal, and supercausal planes. And within these four planes, physical plane is the one where spirit or light, energizing matter, is at its dimmest. Matter is at its greatest, proportionately. And so, as student divine beings, you decided to use this playground of physical plane for you to learn how to create from scratch. And by scratch, we mean to create from a different perspective than you had been learning before you came here. You see, you've been learning on other levels how to create. You've learned how to create this and that illusion. You've learned how to create this state of consciousness. You learned how to create forms, thought forms in the astral plane. You've learned how to create all sorts of interesting things, details. You've learned how to create echo systems, not physical ones, though. You decided that physical plane, the ultimate expression of the physical matter, the ultimate exploration of creation for you, so was the most challenging, most intriguing, and also because you also saw that this planet was getting ready to go through a marvelous consciousness shift, and you wanted to participate in it by learning how to create yourself and then helping create and co-create with others this particular planetary shift. Now, you had planned all this before you came in. In order, however, to create from scratch, you had to erase the parameters you were used to having in your creation classes and exercises on the other levels. Creation, of course, is a function of your godhood, of your divinity. And so you needed to get a fresh perspective, and so you decided to forget your divinity. You decide you would hide it away, and you would come here, and you would look under various rocks, and you would play, and so on, and you would rediscover who you were. But in the meantime, you would be learning how to create. You would learn how to create an image of yourself, to create an awareness of who you were from a foundation of darkness, and move from the darkness into light. What an exciting adventure it seemed to you. And here you are. Now, in order to create, you needed to utilize certain functions. And one of the most important functions of this creation process was the creation of ego. Because in order for you to create, not knowing who you were, and not being connected to the oneness, to the divine, you had to have a sense of individuality. You had to have a sense of distinction between you and your reality so that you could determine who you were and then from that determination choose and create something. The ego as that, as a function of a go-between. It is the one who is on the boundary between your perceptions and physical plane manifestation. Because how are you going to get an illusion to appear real if you don't have a translation mechanism to translate it to your senses, to translate it to your perceptions so that you can perceive you're touching something real and solid, so you can perceive textures, you can perceive smells, you can perceive emotions, you can perceive all sorts of feedback for the creation work that you do. Because if you were to create something and by choosing something, I choose this, I choose that, and how would you be able to tell if you're creating it or not? You first have to be able to perceive the reality as it is, or the illusion created to be three-dimensional, to be real for you. And then you had to be able to translate what your intentions were into something physical, and then as something manifested physically, to use it as feedback to yourself, feedback to have some way to perceive it so that you can perceive whether it matched what you had imagined or not. All right? So the function of this translation process and feedback process is your ego. Your ego keeps you having a sense of boundary, having a sense of distinction between you and other people and you and your environment, you and all the individual objects that are in your environment. Very valuable, very useful, very helpful function. And, of course, the way it was initially set up, very benign, very loving, very beautiful to you as a divine being. Now, there's other functions that you took on in order to create physical plane reality, in order to experience physical life. And one is that you have three minds. Now, you have a conscious mind, you have a subconscious mind, and you have an unconscious mind. And you also want to work with energies and translations in those minds as well. So your ego will work with you there as well. The feedback that you get from your reality gives you a sense of distinction between who you are and who that is or the other. So you have that kind of distinction. Ego brings you that feedback. It does not bring you any interpretation about that. That is up to you. But it does bring you the images, the sensings. It gives you capacities throughout your senses to be able to perceive it. And your conscious mind is the one that learns, responds, decides how to respond, decides how to make a choice about it, what your intentions are, seeks to find out what you imagine, what you want, and seeks to choose whatever creation it is that you wish. Conscious mind, when you are born, is rather non-existent. It is something that has to be built in this lifetime. Conscious mind doesn't just automatically come in with you. In a way, you have to put it together, piece by piece, build it block by block, so that you have a sense of self, a sense of identity, a sense of your own thoughts and feelings as separate from other people's thoughts and feelings, and your own choices, your own realities that are unique to you and your temperament and the way you choose to function in this reality, and the lessons and the interesting explorations and themes and issues and adventures you chose to play with as what you may think to be the culminating wonderful lifetime experience. What juicy theme do I want to change from darkness to light? What do I want to explore? So the ego and you together build a conscious mind. The ego is not really doing the building. You, the self, who is actually the spirit-soul connection, then begins to build a sense of identity using the feedback the ego brings you. The subconscious mind comes in with you, but it is kind of empty, but it is a filter. It enables you to bring in tremendous amount of data and then sort through this data according to your parameters, according to your intentions and choices. And it can bring to you, it can allow what the ego is bringing to you to show, in a sense, as far as just the environment is concerned. It keeps things kind of consistent. So that if you get up from your chair and you go out the door and you go to your car, the changes of perspective as you walk there is maintained in a sense. You get a sense of consistency. It's not like all of a sudden the car keeps changing color on you. Subconscious mind, in a sense, keeps a certain order for you. So you're not like overwhelmed with too much data. Now, when you're first born, you are overwhelmed with data. You cannot, what they say, gestalt objects. You cannot distinguish things from another. It's just a play of color and light. And it takes a while for you to even get a sense of three-dimensionality about it. It takes a while for you to even sense, okay, this is moving and the background appears to be stationary. So this is actually an object in space just moving around. Oh, that's mother, right? That kind of thing. It takes a while for you to sort and get things consistent. So subconscious mind often takes about 2 years to really fully get up and running and get the consistency going. And through the subconscious mind, you also get certain types of context to your circumstances. Context meaning certain energies, certain sensings that may not be just strictly the common senses of the hearing and seeing, but certain intuitional understandings, certain psychic perceptions. A lot of those come right through the subconscious, depending on your order and your consistency as to whether, you know, you're going to allow that in your reality to be consistent with you or not. That's a choice. How psychic are you going to be? Because when you're born, you're completely 100% psychic. You perceive everything. And eventually, over a couple of years, the ego giving you feedback and you looking at it and starting to distinguish yourself, somewhere around the age of 2 or 3, you've got your conscious mind and your subconscious mind delineated in a good enough way that you can start to really work with it. The unconscious mind that the ego also works with and uses has the beliefs about your physics of your physical plane. In other words, how do molecules appear? How to hold an illusion? How to make something feel solid and something feel soft? That comes with deep set belief systems that were used before you even came here, that you chose and you selected and you played with to establish the foundation of the whole illusion, to make it seem and appear real. Now, your conscious mind doesn't often have seemingly access to that unconscious basis of reality. And it also, when you're very young, it's not something that you attempt to change. It's, in fact, very useful for you to learn how your reality is and to learn the laws of your reality, to learn that you cannot just jump off a 20-story building as a 2-year-old and expect to survive. You see, all the laws of physics that you learn anchored in the unconscious mind. but also in the unconscious mind, are the purposes and intentions of why you're here, your connection into spiritual mission, spiritual purpose, a sense of remembering all your other experiences on all the other levels and dimensions, planets, other lifetimes on this planet, whatever exploration you've done in the physical universe. All of that is registered, all of that is held in your unconscious mind. It is accessible to you through the translation of and the presentation of input to you by your ego. Right? So all but it often doesn't come to your conscious mind after about age 2 or 3 or 4. Somewhere though, by the age of 6, you and your ego have firmly established the way you relate to your conscious mind, your subconscious mind, and your unconscious mind. How much you're going to perceive. How much information you can work with. How much translation you want to do and how you're going to do it. Very often by that time, any of you who have had a memory of who you really are from the other side have lost it. By this time, you have forgotten your divine origin. You have fully made a choice on several levels to be human, to play the human game. Now, all of this was originally set up to really help you get a handle on reality, to help you explore what you wanted to explore. It was meant to be fun and adventurous, and there was also, because of your free will choices, the opportunity to feel all sorts of things, a whole gamut of experiences, of pain and joy, pleasure and hurt, and the heights of ecstasy and creativity and the depths of sorrow and loss and shame. Now, you accepted, and it's part of why you chose them, you accepted your parents through your genetics as one of the ways of doing it, the subconscious and unconscious setups for you to use. You patterned, therefore, first of all, on them. They provided you subconscious data. They provided you the filters. They provided to you the consistency of your reality. They provided from their subconscious and unconscious minds, which you tuned into, being in sync with them, and through the genetics of coordinating through their energy field, through their ancestry, many lessons, many experiences, many emotions, reactions, and so forth, coming down to you through your inheritance. These were gifted to you so that you could have something to work with from the get-go. You could not have just come here and then created a whole reality from scratch without a conscious mind being distinct, without the subconscious and conscious mind interfacing, without the workings of the choice and understanding how to make certain kinds of decisions and how to intend and all and utilize your gifts. So it was a really handy thing just to pick up what your parents could give you, and in the unconscious mind to pick up what the collective or consensus reality offered you. Now, everything would have worked out really, really beautifully, and been you would have had an absolutely exquisitely joyous childhood with absolutely no pain whatsoever, really, if your subconscious and unconscious patterns given to you through your family and given to you through your culture and your collective were clean. But they came with a lot of debris. They came with a lot of assumptions. They came with experiences of pain and sorrow and all sorts of terrible emotional stuff, as well as the highs, the lows. And so you didn't start out with a clean slate. You know, a lot of debate was made a couple of centuries ago about if you come in a blank slate or not. No, you don't. You come in from a spiritual level with full intention, and there's no blank slate. There is a totally messy slate given you already from your parents and your society, from your world. But it is meant for you to use for your first reality play, for you to learn how to work with, and that it was assumed, and you assumed, that as you grew older, and as you developed your conscious mind, and as you developed your contexts of perception and how you worked with your ego and learned and responded and reacted and played and created and so forth, that then you would create your own realities. You would create your own priorities and preferences for your subconscious mind. You would create your own anchorings in physics and how you perceived and worked with a physical plane matter in your unconscious. And how you are going to work through your mission, your purposes, your themes. That was the assumption. It still is there. You still are going to do it. Your choice. But you see, your parents did not love themselves unconditionally. They may not have even had a clue that they were divine by nature. They may have gone to church or synagogue or some kind of service to have some kind of idea about being good people and getting something done and being helpful and loving and caring and so on. But at the same time, they were loaded up. They were loaded up with senses of undeserving or feelings of inadequacy or feelings of unexpressed anger just stuffed in there. Frustrations from before you were born, but still hanging in their energy field. So you picked this up. You picked up their emotional energies. And you said, oh, so this is what anger is. Oh, okay, here is what fear is. And you templated off of them as you built your emotional body. You built your mental body with its beliefs and attitudes and orientations. And you built your your physical body, the expectations of your health and where your weaknesses and strengths were in your physical body. Now, the ego's function is just to, as a function, is to bring you feedback. This feedback comes to you as thoughts and feelings. Okay? Now, initially, it's perception. Initially, you perceive things. You perceive energies. But you see, the perceptions of these energies, you can perceive someone who's angry. You can perceive anger inside yourself. But it was up to you, it's been up to you, to determine what spin to put on it. And if your parents put a spin on anger with a sense of powerlessness and a sense of resentment and a sense of fear, you're going to pick that up too as anger. Anger contains resentment, powerlessness, and fear. And you're just going to assume that. But what it means is that you begin to interpret the perceptions that come to you. You begin to put the spin on everything. The spin initially of your parents, siblings, then later the spin of people in school, your teachers, older kids. Then as you get older, the spin of media, the perceptions of others, the beliefs of others in your culture, of your mate, and later even of your children. So in a sense, you initially started out with the idea that, you know, everything was out there coming to you. And in a sense, forgot that this is all within you. You did not see a distinction between you and your ego. You didn't know you were different. Because by the time you began to realize that it was your interpretation of stuff that mattered, you had spent many years just assuming things. Just assuming that anger included this powerlessness, this helplessness, or this sorrow, or this fear, or whatever. You were just assuming that. You're assuming the spins, the angles, the orientations, the interpretations. And because you were taking in some interpretations from your parents to utilize that were warped, twisted, and dark, you accepted them to yourself. You learned to judge. You learned to judge. It was one of the first ways to distinguish yourself from something else. You learned it from your parents. If your parents got angry at you and said, you know, bad girl, bad boy, what are you going to say? Okay, I'm distinct from my mother. I'm distinct and I'm bad. And so, in a way, without you even giving it much thought, indeed you didn't know how to do mature thinking, of course, you picked up shame, you picked up a sense of inadequacy, you picked up a belief, you picked up an orientation, an interpretation that said you were not divine. In fact, you were flawed and you were, something was wrong with you and you weren't okay, and you weren't going to ever be quite okay, and you're going to have to do some kind of compensation for it. Now, when you got the perception, the judgments then, or the spins, came with it. And the way you utilized this, the way you worked with it and built your conscious mind, was by creating the inner dialogue. Now, this is something uniquely human. Other species on this planet, with a couple of exceptions, do not have inner dialogue. They do not utilize the ego function as you do. For you to be masterful reality creators, you have to have an ego. You can't ascend into full and total consciousness until you have an ego. Because first, as the journey is, you must distinguish yourself. But you see, you created this inner dialogue. And then you would talk to yourself. And you would create a story about things. When you saw things being repetitive, you saw things creating patterns, i.e. your subconscious manifestations, you begin to make judgments about that. You know, I always seem to be bad at this. You made judgments about other people. You learned to blame. You learned to blame yourself. You learned to be hard on yourself. You learned how to be hard on others. And when you were a child, in your inner dialogue, you also explored various behaviors, various reactions, to see if you could make a change in the responses of other people. Early attempts at reality creation, indeed. And when you're a child and you're upset, what do? You cry, you whine, you pout, you plead and beg. So many things that you do. You hang your head in shame. You go hide under the bed. All the patterns of childhood reactions. And you see, well, how does this affect them? You know, if you cried enough, or you screamed enough, or you created enough of a temper tantrum, sometimes you'd get your way, yes? If you've had children, you know that as well. After a while, it's like, okay, enough, I can't stand anymore. All right, you got it. Reality creation, child style, right? With the warped and twisted perception that the spin that you put on it. And so inside yourself, you got, okay, if I cry enough, if I wheedle enough, I can get my way. Ha ha. Installed, therefore, in your pantheon of beliefs, right? Sometimes you would give little talks to yourself, even as a child. These discussions inside yourself, this self-talk that goes on all day long, is actually you communicating with other aspects and functions of yourself. And most of the time, it's you and ego. Ego's perceptions coming in, the feedback coming in, wasn't just that you got that toy, but it was also that mother was angry, or mother was happy, or it was also that your sibling was playing a trick on you, and you'd have to be cautious. Lots of context, lots of ideas about what it all meant. Now, your ego function was not meant to do that. That was what you were supposed to do with your conscious mind. It was to take the perceptions and figure out what your spin was on it. But you didn't know how to do that at first, and nobody on in your physical plane sat you down and said, okay, here's how you work with reality creation, okay? You got no messages on how to handle your emotional body, how to build positive thoughts and feelings and beliefs and attitudes and all sorts of good stuff. You didn't learn it. It wasn't taught in school, was it? If they taught it in school, how to feel and how to think, how to really evaluate things from a mature perspective, how to interact with other people, how to perceive, you know, the world would be quite different. Right? So that's one of the trips you decided you would add to the whole collective experience. You were going to show how to do this. You were going to learn how to do this, and then you could share it. But, of course, you didn't know that you and the ego were separate. So you judged yourself. And when you judged yourself, you judged your ego. Because you thought you and your ego were the same. You thought that who was bringing things through to you was you. You thought everything was you. And you took everything personally. If something was wrong, hey, you were to blame. If your mother was sick, or your father was sick, or something happened, or he went away, it was your fault. You must have done something wrong. Now, what happens is that the ego begins to form a relationship with you, begins to almost in a sense be a personified being, because you are so much see it as yourself. And it's as if you split into two, personified being, and you have a little dialogue. You know, a lot of people make a kind of comedic idea that you're sitting around and there's an angel on one shoulder and a devil on the other, right? And they're whispering in other opposite ears. And the devil says, oh, you do something really, we'll get you to do something sneaky and mischievous. Well, you know, and then the angel says, now be good, listen to what mother says. That's what the assumption is anyway. But what it really boils down to is that you are having a dialogue with your ego. Now, we can't say that the ego and you are separate that distinguishedly. You know, you don't isolate it out in the angel and the devil format. But indeed, you are given a concept of evil. You are given a concept of what was right and wrong and good and bad and better and not so good and successful and failing. You were given these concepts. And you began to see just where on these polarities you fell. Did you fall into the success category or the loser category? You began to have a sense of yourself. a sense of who you were, a sense of your capacities, a sense of your limitations. This was the building of the ego I, the ego identification, the first aspect of self, the conscious mind that you could develop. Your habitual responses and reactions, part of your subconscious priority lineup, some of your sense of consistency and order. Is that any time somebody looks at you funny, this is how you are going to react. You're going to get angry and hostile. You're going to get frightened. You're going to get defensive. You're going to go into rational explanations. Everybody has their way. Unconscious mind. You generally are not very well aware of that at all. You are not even aware to the least amount that you could change the laws of reality. That you could fly, you know, that you could live underwater and breathe underwater. Right now, you don't believe that. You don't believe that you can live forever. Sounds like an interesting idea, perhaps. If you feel good, of course. We're saying, oh gosh, life sucks. You don't want to live forever. But you could heal disease, like with a snap of your fingers. All that's unconscious mind. But the perceptions you get from your unconscious mind is that there is no bending of the rules. These are written in stone. This is the way it is. Even though it was put there by spin. It was not put there by direct perception. The ego, as a translator, began to get really miffed at you because you kept blaming it and you kept thinking of yourself in shameful terms and inadequacy terms. And basically, reloading it on your ego. If you thought you were to blame for everything, it was your ego to blame. Because the identification was so, then the ego began to feel like that they had to carry, as a function, more than just a translation. They had to carry all the interpretation. They had to carry all the work of the conscious mind, subconscious, and unconscious mind. Rather than coordinating all of this, rather than just doing their translation work, they had to do everything else too. And the ego certainly did not like it. They were having to be the reality creator instead of you. And you were kind of going on habitual patterns, unconsciously moving through life, just kind of, okay, whatever, and just kind of reacting and responding in automatic knee-jerk ways. As you got into adolescence, so you went through puberty, you had an opening in puberty. Always there is a psychic opening into puberty. At that psychic opening, which happens anywhere between 10 and 14 years of age, you look into your future. You begin to see yourself as a global being relating to something out there. Prior to puberty, all your life was this little insular, whatever's happening to me. Me, 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 me. Everything's about me, 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 me. Suddenly, you see you're a member of the world. There's a bigger world out there. Kind of scary, kind of exciting, but it's huge. And somewhere there in puberty, you get a vision of who you are going to be. Of what you are capable of in your life. You get a hint towards your mission, towards your life work, towards the forms of reality that you are going to want to explore and create. But the sad part about it is that as awesome as this window of opening is, you're carrying with it the limitations of self, of ego. And so when you look into that window, you see yourself limited. And so, from a limited point of view, you see yourself only capable of so much. So you begin what we call the great compensation. In adolescence, in your teen years, is where you learn your compensation patterns, where you learn to make the adjustments in your thinking, feeling, and behaving for your feelings of inadequacy or undeserving or weakness or immaturity or how to deal with your anger and how to deal with your fear. Because as a child, you could have a temper tantrum and you could cry and whine or do whatever little childhood manipulation you could do. But, you know, as soon as you moved into adolescence, you couldn't quite do that same anymore. You were judged for it. Hey, as soon as you're judged for something, you drop it really fast, right? So you had to take on a more sophisticated approach. So you and your ego worked out this whole thing about how to hide your losership, how to hide those parts of you that were flawed or inadequate or not good enough or things that you didn't know. You're hiding your ignorance, hiding your naivete, hiding your immaturity. Let's hide it and make you look like you're wise and on top of everything and in control of the world. The adjustment in adolescence comes at a great price to you because your ego then begins to get really sabotaging of you. Because what you've done in adolescence is create duplicity. Yeah, you started doing some of it as a child. Sometimes you knew you were manipulating deliberately. But when it was in adolescence, you stepped into the facade and decided to imagine and pretend you were this facade you wanted everyone else to see. And you denied and suppressed and numbed out, shut down the part of you, the other part of you, inside yourself, that you thought was not okay, that you didn't want anyone else to see, you wanted to hide from everyone else. This shutdown landed on the ego, and it made the ego really enraged. You mean I also have to shut down? I have to shut down emotion? I can't give you emotional feedback now. I have to shut down all sorts of this and that and the other. I have to shut everything down. And all that I can allow to come through to you is places where people admire you or like you or approve of you. Well, up yours. I can't do that. I have my function and I cannot not do it somehow. All right, so if you're going to keep putting this pressure on me and dump all of this on me and force me to carry all the burdens, and stash me away in a closet, well, I'm going to get you. I am going to send you just exactly what you don't want. Then maybe you'll awaken to this, all this stuff that you've stuffed away, and maybe you will become conscious of yourself, and maybe, you know, you can do something with it and take it off my back. I just want to give you perceptions. But if you're going to make me do everything, then I'm going to take over your reality and I'm going to play with it. And so they do. You're still at this point, for most people anyway, believing that you and your ego are the same thing. You don't see the distinction. And so as a result, as you get in negative experiences, as you get in unpleasant things, this just tends to reinforce the way you see yourself, reinforce your story about yourself, your ego story, the story about your levels of capacity, who you are, why other people like you or don't like you, and all the interpretations that you've put together, and all the problems with your body, and all the problems with your appearance, and why you don't have the perfect nose, and why, and what you can do about it, and all the compensations you can make. Life becomes very, what you might say, congested. Lots of stuff, lots of gunk. It's almost like you're just eating lots of toxic food, and a lot of times when you're an adolescent, you do. It's a time when you can really stuff your face, and most adolescents do like to do that. Love sugar and pizza and all sorts of good things. But on an emotional level, you're doing the same thing. Now, there comes a point, however, in your living with your ego, that you enter on your spiritual path when you begin to awaken. For some of you, it starts in adolescence. Some of you starts in your 20s. And when you do so, your dialogues with your ego suddenly are dialogues, not really monologues the way they kind of have been before, just kind of talking inside yourself. All of a sudden, there's another voice in there telling you about yourself. There's a sense of distinction between who you are, the observer, and the talk chatter that goes on in your mind all day, i.e. the ongoing story. All of a sudden, you see the distinction between these two. You didn't have it before. You thought that what you thought and felt and perceived and what you interpreted and what you decided and what was going on in there and all the distortions and all this kind of crap, all that was just you. That was just natural to you. All of a sudden, you realized it was chosen or choosable. It doesn't have to be that way. Do you remember when you began to realize that? What an enlightening moment it was. What an incredible opportunity for freedom you had. Oh my, this was exciting. You mean I can actually change? I can actually feel something better or do something different? Wow, what a concept. That distinction between you and the ego was powerful and profound. And it's a turning point on your life. It made a significant change in the way your life would unfold from that point onward. Now, it also gave you an idea of your boundaries. The ego, in a sense, provides you a sense of boundary because it is always there at the boundary between your perceptions and your manifestations. It's right there where the stuff happens in the illusion. People who get kind of arrested in child and in child ego have very narrow, very small ego boundaries. Small ego boundaries means that they take things very personally. If you get close to them, they feel oppressed. They can be reactive. They can be defensive very easily. They can think that you're demanding, controlling, even if you're just standing next to them. Small ego is ready to fight, ready to run, ready to do the fight or flight, you know, ready to react automatically, knee-jerk reaction. When you discover that you and the ego are separate, if you have a small ego boundaries, you realize how imprisoned you are, that you take everything personally, that you interpret everything coming in as being judgmental of you. Everything and every reality that you create, threatening almost. You hope that you have successes, but it seems that you get mediocrity at best. And sometimes you really sabotage yourself and humiliate yourself. And you beat yourself up about it. Now, a person with a really small ego boundaries. These are people who try to simplify their life. They don't want to think. They don't really want to feel anything. They don't want to analyze. They don't want to explore knowledge. They don't tend to be good at learning. They don't want to learn anything new. They want to maintain their facade and keep hiding and pretend, they tend to pretend that nobody else sees what's in there. Because they've cut out their awareness of so much of themselves. They assume everyone else has too. And some of these people can act like total idiots. And it just surprises the heck out of them that anyone else sees what they're doing and can call them on their game. Now, if you call the game of a person with a small ego boundary, they're going to be insulted. They're going to be very angry at you. They're going to deny. They're going to think you're just attacking them. These people are very manipulative, as you can imagine. There's people you just want to tiptoe around. You just don't want to, you know, step on their toes because they're a tinder cake. They can blow any time, and they can feel fully justified for anything that they do. The smaller the ego boundaries, the lower the values. They can say they high great values, you know, like in politics, family values. Well, you know, family values varies from person to person. But for them, maybe it means, you know, two cars in the garage, Bible thumping every Thursday night and every Sunday. You know, whatever it means to them. There's just a lot of definitions. But a person who has narrow, small ego boundaries has very small, narrow definitions. They cannot see other people's points of view, nor do they see any point of seeing other people's points of view. Why should I see anybody else's points of view? You know, I've come through a long way to decide that this is right, and this is right, and everybody else is wrong. And so sometimes they can really miss so much the larger picture. They're at a tremendous disadvantage. But they can be very vicious fighters. Or they can be very shut down, and they can be just automatons in their life, just living their life as automatons, just waking up in the morning, doing the same thing every day, and just, you know, routine, 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 routine to bed. Some of these people find solace by joining traditions, religions. They like to be in monasteries sometimes. It keeps their life simple. Simple, simple, simple. That's what they want. They want it simple. They want to be simple like children. Now, if you were in a place like that and suddenly became aware of your ego, it would be just too shocking. Some people get to that place where they are aware of their ego, and all of a sudden, they think they are possessed. Because they watch movies, right? And you know, if you have a voice talking in your head, that must mean you're possessed. Or you're a victim of mind control. There you go. These people can go really off the deep end. They can be very, very paranoid. They're the people who really like the conspiracy theories. And they're afraid that any moment, you know, that the government's going to crash in their front door for some reason and, you know, take stuff from them. Or somebody's going to come take something from them. Or somebody's going to do this to them. Or somebody's going to do that to them. So their moment of enlightenment is a moment of terror. A lot of mental institutions are filled with people who just never quite could get the idea that they and the ego could actually, you know, work together or do something. That the ego and them and all this horrible life was just not their fault, that they could change it. Just the idea of change becomes terrifying for them. Now, there's some people who, and most people, have bigger ego boundaries. People who are empathic, generally known as the spiritual ones, quote unquote, the, you know, the loving earth mother, the people who like to take care of everybody else. Their ego boundaries are really large so that they can include a lot of other people. But the problem with a larger ego boundary is that when you have a large ego boundary, you cannot sometimes distinguish between other people's feelings and yours. You pick up other people's issues and you carry them yourself if they have any resemblance to yours. You could go and sit at the feet of a guru and get extraordinarily ecstatic and uplifted really quickly. Your meditations could lift you. But if you go and hang around with some negative people, whoop, ew, crash you right back down. You're very highly responsive to your environment. And the broader and the bigger your boundaries are, the more seeming impact your environment and other people have on you. So you look at your life and look at, okay, what is my relationship to my environment? How tight are my ego boundaries? Can I get paranoid? Because, of course, all of you have learned through your parents' dispensation of beliefs and so forth that your reality is unsafe. You learned that, quote-unquote, as if it were a truth. If you have narrow ego boundaries, you have all these truths, these beliefs that are rock solid. There's no doubt about them. Or you doubt and question everything. You can go all the way to that other extreme. Now, if your ego boundaries are too broad, you suffer really a very difficult situation. Because you cannot decide what you want. You cannot feel your own feelings. You cannot get your own motivation going. You keep waiting for your motivation to be told you. You just keep waiting for enough information, enough input so that you can make a decision. And you can wait and wait and wait and wait and keep getting more and keep getting more and keep getting more and never changing. Because it's never quite enough. Because you don't look within yourself to realize, well, you know, let me distinguish who I am and who I am, what I feel and think, and what's natural to me, what's my natural way, what's my natural temperament, my natural style, my natural rhythms, what are my priorities, what means most to me, what matters to me, what's significant and meaningful to me. The wider your ego boundaries, the broader they are, the more you wait for significance to come to you from outside. And so you can go endlessly, endlessly to teachers and study endlessly. The eternal students, you know, those people who just keep going to college forever and ever. It's a wonderful experience. College can be so much fun. There's so much to learn and so much to do there. But when are you going to take what you know, learn who you are, and apply it, and do some good new creation work? You see, a lot of people who run from reality, who hide out in their little ivory towers, just love to do research, but don't engage with their world, can be people who have had ego boundaries so far detached that just being in public, being with people, being in a crowd can be overwhelming to them. They have to be isolated. They have to be living way off somewhere. There's people whose ego boundaries are so dissolved, so faint, so difficult to see, that they become every person they communicate with. They become that person. There's really no way for them to figure out how to create realities because they don't know who they are at all. Their ego story is one of them attempting to find themselves in other people. Now, one of the things that ego does for you is to bring you plenty of perceptions. It brings you feedback. If you could use ego positively, of course, and then judge your feedback, then you could use that feedback to take action. It would give you feedback that could reflect some aspect about yourself that you want to work with. But instead, you may take it as being yet more that you have to learn and more you have to process. And oh my gosh, you're still not there yet. You're the flawed one trying to find your way to the kingdom of heaven. Now, one of the expansions of ego was meant to try and establish a connection with the oneness. If I can connect with the oneness of everything, then I will be uplifted and I will be free. But you see, you have to have ego first. You have to be clear who you are ego-wise, what your identities are, how you perceive yourself, what spin do you put on you. You have to know that first before then you can distinguish a greater frequency from yourself and realize that the whole can be connected to in a beautiful, loving, and enlightening kind of way. So, of course, when a person with extremely broad ego boundaries becomes aware of the distinction between self and ego, it is immediately a battle. It is immediately a sense of, oh, here is my obstacle. Oh, yeah, this is my problem. Ego is my problem. Yeah, it's that ego that continuously brings me all these negative people in my life. Or it's that ego that continuously, you know, sabotages all my plans. But you see, that phase of encountering and even sparring with your ego is a necessary step on your journey. A necessary step on your spiritual journey. Because just as when you were an adolescent, you had to learn how to rebel against your parents to kind of establish an identification of yourself as distinct from them, in a sense, you have to do this also with your ego. So don't judge yourself that you and your ego have battled. The thing, though, is that when you and your ego battle, generally the ego appears to come out of head. They've got the edge. They've got the upper hand because they've been doing this translation thing a lot longer. And now you're just realizing it. And now you're stuck in the patterns. And you got to get yourself out of the patterns. Now, but what it seems to be is that when you become aware of your ego, it seems that you and your ego have, in your fight, play games with each other. Your ego tells you how great you are and then sets you up with experiences to embarrass you. You know, here you finally make your grand entrance. You know, the old vaudeville routine. You make your grand entrance and you're coming in and then you stumble all over yourself. As the trumpets sound and everybody looks your direction, here you come, and then you stumble and act like an idiot, right? Done so perfectly by comedians, you know. And why is that funny? Everybody inside knows. I can relate to that one. Also, you learn a lot about yourself by your battle with ego. Because the games that the ego plays will show you where you give your power away. It'll show you what you really think about yourself and what you think and feel about others and the world. Ego will show you. It will give these reflections to you. Now, if the reflections ego gives you is like, okay, here's magic things that are about to happen, pop, pop, pop. It's all the most wonderful things about to happen, and at the last minute it all fizzles. Oh, gosh, my ego pulls a rug out from under me again. The saboteur. Ah! The ego game there is meant to show you how you can go into fantasy, and you're not even perceiving your reality. You're not thinking, you're not feeling, you're not evaluating, you're not understanding things. So you can be so easily fooled, you can just wander off. Everything's okay. Self-delusion is so easy with the ego. Oh, everything's going to be okay. Look how everything's just flowing. Everything's going to be okay. And then when it isn't, nothing happens, then because you don't know that that you're okay. And you think that the ego's got it out for you. You'll blame the ego. Oh gosh, it's that saboteur again. Darn, my ego got me again. Instead of saying, well, wait a minute. How did I go into la-la land there? How did I do that? What happened there? How do I see the reality zone ahead of me? Now, we call the reality zone the zone in which you and your reality are connected in a clean, clear way, so you can perceive it pretty accurately, and you know pretty much what you want to do, and so your interaction without any judgment, very loving, very free interaction with your reality, manifest stuff. That's the reality zone. That's where the stuff you really want manifests. But the ego game that is most damaging for you either takes you to the fantasy side, oh, everything's going to be okay, oh, gosh, everything's be good, and you don't address stuff, or you don't know what to address, and you're just wandering around, oh, everything will be okay, alternating with maybe deep terror, but okay, everything's going to be, and that's on one side, that's the fantasy side. Things are not lined up real enough for you. That you don't have things lined up. You don't have things connected. There's missing pieces that you're not even allowing yourself to perceive. You're missing something. You gloss over it. Okay, it's all going to be okay. I'm not getting it, but it's okay. Now, to a certain extent, yes, it is going to be okay. But the certain fantasy will have a sense of you having, you know, won the lottery or something like that. Or somehow or another getting this amazing turnaround in this relationship or whatever. Or that, you know, that person will come back. They will call you up and say, I'm sorry, I treated you like crap. Can we get together? I promise. You know, it will be great this time. I love you. You're the best thing that ever happened to me. That's fantasy land stuff, right? If that actually happens, it's an ego trap. Watch. You know, the ego's got you on the fantasy land train ride, right? Now, on the other side of the reality zone is where you give things too much importance or too much significance. You put charge on it. You put weight on it. You load it up. It's really, 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 really big and heavy and important. So when it's... Okay, and so the ego can take you over there, and as soon as you really open up to your mission or there's a really great opportunity for you or something like that, the ego says, oh no, that's too much. That's going to imprison you. That's going to create this problem, that problem, da da da, and see how you've always, you know, had a problem with this one. And look at the life choices that you've made, says the ego. You've chosen to be defensive, or you've chosen to run away and hide and so on, and this is not consistent with that. So it's too much. It's too heavy. Or the ego is going to say, yeah, you're going to experience this, and then if you can get this, you know, everything else is going to just fall in place for you. Now, while that sounds a lot like fantasy land, in a way it is, the thing is that you put some kind of significance to a certain action that you take that is beyond the level of value for that action. And so you imbue some circumstances with too much significance. And when you do that, you sabotage yourself. It hurts. There's a lot of emotional disturbance in that pathway. You do end up overloading yourself. You do get up disappointed. You can judge yourself as the loser. And you won't manifest. The ego's loading you up. Now, if you are clear, then you can say, you know, I'm making this thing way too big. I'm making this survival thing. Okay, I've got to get a job by next Tuesday. Okay, it's looming over me. It's heavy duty. But if I don't get that job by Tuesday, then I'm not going to be able to do this, and I'm not going to be able to do that. And, oh, gosh, what's going to happen to my life? If you could take it and reduce it down to just the job, if you could take the time factor out of it, Often that's what makes things really heavy is time factor. Deadlines. If you didn't have any deadlines, would your life be easier? Deadlines are put on something to gain and add significance to it, in a sense to force yourself, to motivate yourself to do it or to go there or to create it. When you do that and put pressure and demand on yourself, then you're putting pressure on yourself to perform. You're putting pressure on yourself to show that you're deserving, to receive from God. God is all that is, to show that you're valuable as a spiritual being. And sometimes you can really screw yourself up that way. And then what the ego can then do, and is not only do you not get what it is that you desire, but you get a lot more than you bargained for. Unconscious things, old, really, you know, sudden changes in your life, like sudden health problems or accidents and things like that. Things that radically, disturbingly change your life almost overnight. They come from that side. Now, from a reality creator's point of view, you realize that comes from the unconscious mind. I need to make a choice of who I am as the light being. I need to reconnect with who I am. On the fantasy side, I've missed something. But on the over-reality side, I'm in a sense not in my true motivation. I'm not clear about what I really want, what I really desire, and what's true for me. I'm putting too much significance on something. Means I'm not in a balanced me, what I believe. So you can use that for feedback to shift your beliefs. Shows you have beliefs that are limiting you. When things work really well, when things flow plunk, 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 and it's really great, then you say, oh, okay. All right, so let me look at this now. I lined up this way and that way and that way, and it reflects this way, and it connects with who I am this way, and I made these choices, and this is the emotional states that came with it, and that's so forth and so on. Okay, I see how I did that. Okay, I choose to repeat it that way. I'll try that again. You see, and then you can learn with it. Now, as you progress on your spiritual journey, and you and your ego get much more clear about who you are, distinguished from each other, you begin to get a sense of yourself. Because until you really get a sense of yourself as the light being, you cannot trust yourself. Because who's talking in there? Is it you or your ego? You really don't know. You can't tell the distinction between them. And a lot of times, if you think that it's you talking, it's really your ego pretending to be you, saying all sorts of nice things, and in a sense, fooling you. So you really have to know yourself pretty well. And as you continue on your spiritual path, sometimes the ego game goes really on another dimension. Your ego can also masquerade as your higher self. And on a spiritual journey, this can have very difficult, devastating results. In a sense, it can really take you off your path for a while. Now, sometimes you need to go and explore some kind of side venue or whatever. But you can get really lost for a while if you listen to your ego and think it's your higher self. How do you tell? Well, you got to know who you are. Your ego has been giving you the image of who you are by all the feedback with the interpretation that you dumped on it and all the judgment you dumped on it that is jumping back on you. So until you start sorting that and clearing that out and distinguishing yourself from everything else, it's very difficult to say. But on your spiritual journey, gradually, you become clearer and clearer about who you are as distinguished from your ego. You know that when you are clear about yourself, you have certain states of being that feel light, that feel good, They feel free. There's a flow to your emotions. There's a flow in your life. You can feel it. And when that's there and you're centered in yourself, you feel great. You know you're on track. You know spiritually you're on track. But still, from time to time, in some area of your life, some area that you haven't really finished cleaning up, the ego can get you. That's where you are now. There are little places here and there. You still have vulnerabilities to your ego. It can still snag you. It can still judge you. You can still judge yourself. You can still buy into the interpretations that have come from your child or your adolescent time periods in your life. But it's very important right now to recognize that the ego can very successfully mimic the messages that you think your higher self would give you. It's not that the ego is smarter than you. It's not that the ego holds a higher frequency than you. But the ego does know how to fool you. It knows the places you're missing pieces. Okay, so we can create a fantasy here. It also knows where you put undue weight and significance upon things. Look at your culture. Your culture puts undue weight and significance on money. If it has to do with money, people will kill. People will destroy. All integrity goes out the window. Look at the comedians have been having a field day with Governor Blagojevich, right? Governor of Illinois, who thought he'd sell Obama's Senate seat to somebody. Money. His ego. Where do you think his ego was? He says, any politician will do this. It's just what politicians do. I love the people of Illinois. He is in so much delusion. He's in so much fantasy. Ego fantasy. His ego parameters are so small. It just baffles him. Baffles him why anybody would be disturbed by him acting like an idiot and with a lack of integrity. Also look at this Madoff, who ran a Ponzi scheme for $50 billion, right? $50 billion, yeah. It's like he's annoyed because he's on house arrest. Oh, poor baby. It's like, why should I pay for bilking people out of billions of dollars? They're stupid. I shouldn't have, I don't owe them anything. I'm not responsible. I'm above the law. When people get into fantasy, when people get themselves in ego so severely lost there. Of course, then it finally gets obvious, right? It's obvious that people are not knowing how to function. Their egos said, hey, we can get away with this. The ego said, hey, nobody will mind. This is just, this is just business. It's just money. Money's number one. That's the most important thing. So flip-flop, back and forth. Neither one of them stayed in the reality zone. So look at with you and your ego. you and the dialogues you have with your ego? What games does it play with you? Well, we have a list over here. Some of the games of ego. Now, we want to emphasize ego will only play games with you if you're numbing out or not feeling stuff or really don't know who you are, particularly. It'll befriend you and it'll dump you later. Do you do that to yourself? Does it compare you to others and explain why you're better than they are? But when push comes to shove, you're the one who gets screwed. You're the one who gets left out or rejected. Does the... the channel had a friend who was absolutely... She was connected with her guides and her spirit guides and everybody and her higher self, and they told her she was going to win the lottery. She had it all planned out, exactly what she was going to do. For that week's lottery was so much million, and she just knew that was it. And so she got her ticket and one ticket. She got her ticket and sat in front of, you know, the TV set, and they announced the numbers. And these numbers were not her numbers. She was devastated. That's ego. Devastated. She really was devastated. It was like totally crushed. Because, why? Because she heard fantasy and she trusted. She didn't think. She didn't think, okay, do you have the actual belief? Does it make sense to you? Is it natural to you? Do you see this as in the reality zone? Do you really see the lottery for you in the reality zone? There's some really high-level humdinger metaphysicians, light workers, reality creators on this planet. And we would be surprised if any of them ever win the lottery. Because it's really, in your collective, it's really, it's not something that is earned. It's not an entitlement. It's not something that your guides give you. It's a level of manifestation, and money's got to be important enough. Not too important. Or fantasy la-la land, important, but really important enough, just right. And most people who are on a spiritual path, they don't really, they see the importance of survival and things, but money itself, money's not what's important. And it's one of those blows that when you're on your spiritual path, when you finally come to the realization that money doesn't hold that same importance. It's still significant because you need it in your reality to survive and all that kind of thing. But if you really come down to it, the things that are important to you, they're higher. They're not just an energy of an exchange, but they are the actual feeling of exchange, of the giving and the receiving and the loving and sharing and celebrating and belonging and fulfilling higher needs. That's really of more importance. So it was amazing. It took a good couple of months for this friend, being a psychic reader and people coming to her for psychic readings, and she was devastated. She could hardly do her psychic readings for a while. It was such a devastating trip that she didn't get the lottery. That's ego, right? So ego can promise you the lottery, and you don't even get one number, right? Not one. You just look at it in disbelief. I programmed for this. I worked on this. I put all these meditations together for this lottery. I didn't get one number. Ego really got you on that one. And the same thing, does it promise success only to pull it out from under you at the last moment? And when that happens, do you hear within yourself laughing at you? You stupid idiot. You did it again. You always do it this way. Does your ego tend to give you the opposite of what you ask for? If you really want something, if you get really excited about something, what's the ego going to do? What do you tend to manifest about things you get really passionate and just totally gung-ho about? What happens there? Pay attention. That's when your ego can come in. Because that's when you're looking with tremendous weight, tremendous significance to the translation into your physical reality. Here it comes in. Oh no. Ego can do that. What a letdown, yes? Now, there are at least two or three games that your ego plays with you. And most of the games have to do with some kind of setup that the ego gives you. Where they get you to trust them or believe in them, and then they turn on you. Another one has to do with your self-image. Is that you give yourself lots of positive in your self-image, and then you don't look at that residue of shame that's sitting there in the back. You try to ignore that. Oh, I got to think positive, without clearing out and really being aware of the negative. So what's the ego going to manifest for you? A reflection of the negative part. Why? Because as a spiritual being, you want to know what to change. So it's going to keep showing you what you got to change. Now, the ego only manifests for you, only gives you the feedback based on your self-image, what you think is possible, what you think is feasible and natural to you, your beliefs about reality, what's feasible in your reality. And how is it going to work? Is it magic work in your reality? How does it work if it does? How do you use it? Okay? And also, your patterns of response, learning, and behavior. If you know how to learn from a very conscious and empowered place, eventually your feedback is going to be clean to your emotions and to your mind. So you've got those three areas. Those three areas are areas you need to clean up or to make sure are clean. And dear ones, you've done a lot of work. You've done a lot of this work. For the most part, it's about clarifying those three areas. This is where the ego gets you. It gets you through your perception of yourself. What is reflected to you? If you have something to fill in the blank, I must be blank. I'm always blank. Fill in the blank. If it has any negativity to it, then it's a scenario your ego is going to bring you over and over again. It's what you think about your ego. It's what you think about yourself. And if you change it and give it to your ego to go out there and create, the ego cannot manifest something for you that is different from what you own, from your self-image. It cannot. If your self-image is expansive and you've cleaned out all the darkness, you've got to get a response to your self-image. That's beautiful. Because the ego is not capable of giving you something that's horrible and negative if you don't have that energy in your program, in your intention. If you are disappointed in something, if you have an issue with disappointment, there's certain emotions that you go through and certain attitudes and certain adjustments and rationales and so on that you go through. If you clean that out, the ego cannot manifest something that you would perceive as disappointing. It cannot. Because all your disappointment pattern is gone. If you get disappointed and you go, oh, well, that's interesting. What did I miss? Let's see. Oh, okay. I'm going to change that now. Let's go back to the drawing board and let's fix this. Without any judgment. Without going, getting all bent out of shape. Without getting miserable. The ego cannot give you a disappointment because you don't have enough charge on it. If you have a lot of charge on it, oh gosh, but what if I'm disappointed? Or what if I make a mistake? Or what if it falls apart? Or what if it doesn't work? Or what if, what? You've got so much charge on it. Hey, it's got to happen that way so that you can clear it. So you can see that you've got so much charge on it and you can clear it. Very important to look out. And then, of course, your beliefs about reality. Are you psychic? Can you hear the message from your higher self? Can you connect to God and Goddess directly? Can you own your divinity directly? Can you believe that you can change things in the physical plane and physical laws by changing beliefs, by choosing something different? If you develop that side, this is the last side to develop. You've worked on your conscious mind. You're doing really well. You work on your subconscious mind. You're almost there. Unconscious mind now is your final frontier with your ego. You clean that up. It's like you've created a new collective, a new consensus for yourself, a new unconscious mind interface, a new function for yourself in your world. Ego cannot manifest anything that's not in alignment with that. So, very important to recognize how the ego works with you. Now, we're going to take a break. And then we're going to have questions and you're going to write the workshop with us. We're going to have a good time there. Then we're going to come back and speak to you, then give you the steps on clearing, on any kind of manifestation you want to do, clearing and healing the negative ego relationship so that you and your negative ego, now healed to positive ego, you and positive ego, or let's say at least neutral ego, how then you can work to clear, to own, to create, and work together as it was originally intended, as you originally intended, so that you can get on with your mission, so you can get on with the work you want to do, so you can get on with the joy and celebration and success of your life. And then we will conclude with a meditation in which we will do that process. So during this break, think about how you and your ego interface. What part of your ego and you are from child? What part of your ego and you are from adolescence? Where are your childhood issues and where are your adolescent issues? Are they gone now? Or are they still inside there? Are you still worried about what other people think about you? Are you still concerned that you'll never get quite enough? You'll never have enough? Look at your issues with ego. Play around with that. Sense what level of working with ego it is. Because if you still have child stuff, you still have child ego in there. You have small ego stuff in there. If you have adolescent stuff still in there, image and appearance and all this kind of thing, and how you engage with the world, then you've got much broader ego, but at the same time, still can be sabotaging. All right, so we're going to take a 15-minute break, and we'll be back with you for the questions and answers. You can think about what questions you would like to ask. So for now, farewell.